Not oh really. No, you milked him.
I guess this means it's for real.
Is it?
That was an aggressive push.
All right, well, welcome everyone to another episode of Geology on the Rocks, your one-stop audio shop for all things rocks and rocking out. So a brief overview of this evening episode will include the intros and hellos, followed by a triple junction and new news, maybe. So our main discussion is going to dive into all things balls related tonight. It's going to be cool. And between the bars of our main discussion, we'll present to you another Mineral Minute. And before signing off, we will close things out with another edition of That Freaking Rocks. A big thank you to all our listeners out there for allowing us to be played between your earballs and for spending your time with us each week / months long breaks. And if you would like to reach out to us, whether it be for episode ideas like this evening's episode, answers you are wanting, questions, or just to tell us about all the things we said wrong, you can reach us at geologyotr@gmail.com or reach out to us on the Instagram, the Geology on the Rocks podcast, because we loved hearing from you. So it does look like things are squared away over here. So without further ado to all of you over there, I am your host, James the Geologist.
And I'm Brian Baggins.
And I am a grown-ass woman, Carly.
All right. And on the line with us today, we have
Dr. David, and I hope I don't butcher this, Rachal?
It's all right, yeah.
Oh, no, we got to do it. We got to do it the right way.
Rachal.
Oh.
I've heard worse.
Okay.
I would have been like, put a little German on it. Like, yeah. With the cue balls, it's English, but with our Germans.
We should say that we don't have a triple junction today.
Oh, no. I said we were going to give a shout out to
mineralogy class.
Yeah, the mineralogy class
at
where?
U something.
UTD.
UTD. Oh, no. Yeah, we do. UTD, University of Texas.
We do want to give them a shout out for having us out. We gave a little talk to their geology club about science communication, which is interesting. But
CSULA.
Yeah. So we had some new listeners from there that were, I guess, jamming us during their mineralogy labs or something
like that.
Yeah.
But more importantly, where did you graduate from? And do you mind if we call you David, or would you like Dr. Rachal?
Dave. The only person calls me doctor is my mailman. So just call me Dave. Seriously.
Okay. Got Dave. It. Dave. But where did you graduate from?
My bachelor's from SFA.
Okay.
Boston.
Right. So you got your bachelor's from SFA.
Spent about 4 years in the oil field, and then I came out to New Mexico, and I got my master's in physical geography from New Mexico State and my PhD in soil science from New Mexico State.
Awesome. What would you say the biggest difference between, I guess, physical geography and physical geology for those that might not know out there, or the biggest differences that you had?
Oh man, mostly a lot of GIS stuff like that. There's not too much of a difference, I don't think.
Does it have more of a geomorphological component in landforms and fluvial processes?
Yeah. I came out here because I really wanted to work at White Sands National Monument at the time. Now it's a national park, and I have always been fascinated by the Tularosa Basin. I went out there when I was 14. Just changed my life. And once I got out of SFA, I did the oil field thing. I just said, look, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to get a degree or two. I'm going to just study the dunes. And I went from the dunes and I started studying the soils. And now I'm a private consultant and a geoarchaeologist. So pretty much archaeologists hire me to find archaeological sites.
That's so rad.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What would you say? Okay, so for those mm-hmm. out there, how would you describe the White Sands, right? Because I believe, aren't they gypsum? Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's a gypsum. It's the largest gypsum dune field in the world. And gypsum's really not that common. When you look at a geologic map of the basin and range of the southwestern United States, there's just not a lot of gypsum just because you don't have a lot of calcium sulfate. New Mexico, on the other hand, has a lot of gypsum. We have a lot of calcium sulfate, a lot of Permian age and hydrite deposits. And we've had a lot of tectonics, which has buckled the landscape up and has kind of exposed those beds, and then they get dissolved and then they get washed down and they load in the paleo lake basins. And once that happens, the lakes dry out, the gypsum gets blown around more, and it gets incorporated into everything.
That's like the paleo lake kind of thing is like what the Great Sand Dunes ended up coming from, right?
Exactly.
But I'm curious about the gypsum layers. So definitely gypsum is not like a really dominant mineral, especially in like as in a sedimentary layer. But how thick are the deposits out there? Here we'll have gypsum seams of like 2 inches inches. You know,
that's what I think of it as. It's just like, you just don't want to hit it a gypsum seam.
Yeah, so I'm just curious, like, how different are the thicknesses out there in that basin?
It could be hundreds of feet. I mean, the dune field itself, at the thickest part of the dune field, is probably 30 feet thick. But the lacustrine sediments are hundreds of feet thick from what coring has been done.
Yeah,
it's pretty extensive. And we don't really have a good record. I mean, we have a pretty good record to about 50,000 years ago, but it's quite possible that this lake was persistent, you know, during the, you know, early Pleistocene and middle Pleistocene.
This may be just my lack of knowledge of that. Now, but could it, because I know, right, I mean, with the gypsum, it's hydrated calcium sulfate, right? So, I mean, like, if it dehydrates, I mean, does it that happen? No.
Yes.
Okay.
Anhydrite?
Anhydrite. It will, lose that water and just convert and not be gypsum at all.
Right. So, like, you have all these people living along the lake margin there over the last, you know, thousands of years, and they build these big fires, and it essentially just turns it into plaster of Paris, and it just turns it into these rock hard mounds. And you have all this wind blowing through there, and what it does is it kind of inverts the landscape, where the mounds, which were the original land surface, are now meters high.
That I think that's cool in the just the invertedness, because I mean, like, thinking about it, you're like, man, that's the oldest, when you would think that it's the youngest.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it's pretty common. So.
Yeah.
Oh, the inversion?
Yeah. I mean, even with the megafauna tracks, you have inversions. It's a pretty common process out there with the gypsum, just because it's so ductile and it gets wet, and then it dries out again. It'll form these physical crusts. It's a very dynamic mineral.
Cool. Then, go ahead, Brian.
Well, yeah, you brought up the people that were settling there, and that's kind of what the paper is pointing to this whole time that you put out. And
let's backtrack. Yeah. How about why we're here? We're going to be talking about your research. So why don't you tell the listeners just a little bit about your research before we get into it?
Yeah. And if you don't mind, would you mind me reading the title so that they can look this up and figure this out?
Yeah, absolutely. No, go for it.
So this is in the Journal of Geoarchaeology, and it's deep water delivery model of rupia seeds to a nearshore terrestrial setting and its chronological implications for late Pleistocene footprints. Tularosa Basin, New Mexico.
Cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's big news right now, those footprints, and they're pretty significant because they supposedly date to the last glacial maximum. That's around 21,000 to 23,000 years ago. That's calibrated radiocarbon years. Now, that's significant because that predates most archaeological sites in North America by 5,000 to 6,000 years. And the big issue is the seed layers themselves and the material that they dated, which is Rupia serosa. Now, Rupia, I'm going to go ahead and call it Rupia from here on out, is a submerged plant, and it grows underwater. And what it does is it pulls in a lot of older carbon from the water as a carbon source, right? And what that does is it can make the plant seem older than what it is, right? It can, if you radiocarbon date it, it can come back thousands of years older than what it really is. And that's what's called the hard water effect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw that in there. So, I mean, okay, so that is there a feud in here that I'm reading between the lines? With maybe some of the other...
Well, it seemed like there was a previous interpretation, which is kind of, you know, that I took the paper and they're all going towards the same goal, but there's the, hey, the previous interpretation was these were coprolites, and you should probably describe the lake balls.
Right,
for everybody.
Right. So you have these seed layers, and these seed layers have footprints stratified within them, and they dated these seed layers. The issue is that within these seed layers, you have these balls, and these balls are composed of rupia material, stems and seeds. And the seeds, that's a good enough for our talk, but technically they're like drupelets or nuttles, if you know, want to sound like a nerd, that's the technical name. But we're just going to call them seeds, just for this little podcast. So you have these balls in these seeds, and for years they've been calling these balls Ice Age megafauna turds.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the reason why they call them Ice Age megafauna turds is because you find them sometimes close by or near megafauna tracks and trackways, like mammoths and camels, felids and canid tracks, right?
Yeah.
And these people assume that these balls are nearby the tracks, that they're from the animal itself, right? Now, go ahead. You have a question?
No.
Yeah,
I was going to say, if you look at the pictures, yeah, they kind of do look like...
Yeah, they look like someone just squatted and laid, you know?
It does look like it, kind of.
Absolutely. So I was out there running around, and I have this project where I'm out there trying to find human tracks and megafauna tracks. So I'm walking around out there, and I pick one of these things up, and I immediately thought it was a turd. I really did. I thought, holy cow, man, it really looks like it. But then I had to say, Dave, control yourself. Mm. You know, because I was very skeptical, because it looks very recent. But I've never seen like a pack rat do that or any kind of other animal that would create something like that. But I was skeptical. So I sent a picture of this ball to like 15 specialists around the United States. Only 5 people responded, but most of them said it was a coprolite, which is a fossilized species.
Yeah, yeah.
But what really made me question that interpretation is one of them said, oh, we found canine hair inside of it, hair from a dog inside of a camel turd. And that really threw me off because I thought, well, why would a camel eat a dog?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that really made me question it. So I immediately grabbed a purported turd, brought it back to my house, put it under a microscope, looked at it, I dissected it, and, you know, it didn't seem like a coprolite to me. And the reason why it didn't is that you have all this rupia material that's woven together. It's tightly woven together, and they're very delicate little pieces of stems, so there's no mastication. And then what was also weird is that the seeds that were in the ball were only concentrated on the outside of the ball, the mantle of the ball. There wasn't anything within the ball.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I really loved that observation in particular, that there was you didn't notice any like chewed or digested remains of these stems or leaves and seeds. That was really cool. And to bring our listeners into why you were even looking at these, right? So like these have been previously used, and maybe if I remember right, they were interpreted as coprolites, and the age date is what constrains these footprints that are out there in this basin that are known to be like some of the earliest humans in North America.
That's correct.
Okay. And so this paper really is like, hey, you know, there's no, when you actually look at these, and I wonder, how do you know the discussion on why they were thought to be coprolites other than just their proximity to the tracks of the megafauna?
That's it. Okay. And one thing out here, when you're dealing with archaeological records, things get shifted around a lot. And a lot of times you can have like thousands of years of occupation that's been eroded and they collapse down on top of one another. And they're all on one surface. It doesn't mean that they all live together.
Yeah.
It just means that you have deflation and you have this lagged out palimpsest surface. Just because you have things nearby doesn't mean they're associated with. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that does. And so the balls are
balls.
They're on the surface, but they're also like within in situ, within strata, right? Interstratum. So, and that's why they're, you know, if they were just out there on the surface, that could be any time between the deposition of that sediment. But you found them within the soil.
Yes.
Okay. Were they found within like an A or a B? Like, do you want to describe the soil pedology at all out there?
Okay. So this unit that they're finding the trackways in, these sea layers that contain these balls, it's really a sea horizon.
Okay.
It's a unit where it's really showing rapid deposition. It has Aeolian, Lacustrian, and alluvial components, and these things are thinly varved like lake layers, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a grading so fast that it's not even, pedogenesis can't even begin to start on it.
Gotcha.
So we know it's the last ice age. We know it's a Pleistocene deposit, but the stratigraphy is really recording Pleistocene weather.
See, I think that's rad. And then you want to talk, I guess, a little bit about I always am always, when I teach this, I'm like, is it Sykes or Seychelles? Seychelles.
I highlighted that because like people at work will be like, oh, that Seych wave is going to come over the dam and it's going to erode it out. And I'm like, it's Seych.
Yeah. But then also I think of it like psych. So I'm like,
Sykes.
I don't know.
That was a cool part. Yeah. So,
because I think that goes into the weather portion that you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
So you said it's recording weather or climate, or I guess that what you were saying.
Yeah, it's the paleoclimate record is, you know, Pleistocene. It's, you know, it's slowly warming as we get we move into the early Holocene, so on and so forth. But superimposed on that broad climate trend is a tremendous amount of weather, and that's really what it is. It's storminess. So when you find these seed layers and you find these balls inside of them, you're really seeing storm events, because the seed layers are not in any kind of lacustrine deposit. This is an aquatic plant, and it should be correlated to submerged glade sediments, but instead you only find them in terrestrial facies, tan gypsum deposits. And what that is the seeds are being ejected up onto the shoreline. Have you guys been to Galveston?
Yeah.
Who hasn't? Okay. Right. You guys in Texas. Yeah. You walk around out there along the beach when it's low tide, you always see all kind of debris up high on the shoreline that got deposited up there during high tide.
Yeah.
That's how the seeds are getting pushed up into that terrestrial setting.
Yeah. So the Pleistocene is an interesting thing. I do a lot of fluvial geomorphology, and there is always within each analysis a Pleistocene gravel deposit somewhere, because it was warming and you had these massive floods that would come and rip these watersheds. But that ties into the Seiche wave, that you had these intense storms, and that was what is allowing the rupia to get pulled from deeper water up to the surface and float there and then get tangled up. And that's the mechanic of, then you have the balls that they're rolling onto the shore. Is that right?
That's right. So the storms come through, you have downdrafts, and think of rupia as the tumbleweed of the lake. It's really, really delicate. The storms come through, the turbulence in the water breaks it apart, and the stems float and the seeds float. And as they float, they accumulate in these mats. And once it gets into that mat phase, it can stay afloat for days to weeks, possibly months, and it can move around for miles. But sometimes if the wind's still pretty consistent, that storm's going on, it'll push that mat all the way across the lake, which is about 15 kilometers, and roll it up into a ball in these northeastern embayments. And the storm stops, the lake drops, and it deposits those balls in a very high up near shore setting.
Yeah, so if anyone doesn't know, like Seiche's, now that I know how to say it, they're standing waves, and you can almost think of them as like a storm surge, right? Because it's when you think of standing waves, it's these oscillations, but it's the water is moving in the opposite direction as the energy wave, so it just looks like it's a wave that's in place and can in essence look like a storm surge. So that's how you're getting these balls,
right? Yeah, it can be
out of the water.
It can be a storm can do that. But it's any alteration to the water surface that's at its most static, right? And so a tsunami due to an earthquake can produce Seiche waves, big storms, landslides, anything like that can cause.
But I also think of it as the you're adding like the interference pattern. So it's like the waves that are together get higher, but they're standing waves, right? It might.
Yeah, it's something about like the frequency, the period of the wave and the height that there's.
It's like 2 weeks. Yeah, I don't know. It's just a lot of stuff that can be going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but not only with that, so you have placement of lake sediment, plant debris that you're talking about, the rupia balls, and then, but you have scour on the shoreline due to this, right? And so I wanted to ask you something about that, because one of the balls.
Balls.
It's just, yeah, sorry.
We're giggling every time you say balls too. So.
But yeah, so the age range was like 1500 years. And I know that radiocarbon there's all sorts of things that go with that when you have your calibrated ages and conventional. So it can be a fun thing, but the age range on that, is it possible that the reworking of the sediment on the shoreline, you've pulled in seeds from a previous event? Like where the...
Absolutely. Yes. That is possible for sure. And it's all getting mixed up. Yeah. It's pretty, dynamic situation and setting, but yeah, that is a possibility.
And something else about, so we could talk, we talked about the hard water effect, and I guess this paleo lake is Otero, I think. Right. And it is fed by, there was like the Lost River and there's other ones. I guess the fact that the Seiche wave model is preferred rather than, hey, these balls were just like, there's plants out there in the shallow water, is that you have influx of fresh water that would reduce the alkalinity and salinity in those like local regions of the lake. Do you want to talk, maybe we could talk about that, in that it seemed like maybe someone else had done some research on those rivers, or maybe not, in the assumption there.
Okay, so Lost River is lost.
Yeah.
We don't really know.
Yeah.
We don't, I mean, really, I mean, honestly, like, they, you know, they, the researchers that are really selling this LGM stuff, like, it, that's part of their model, but no one really knows where the Lost River entered the basin. Okay. They're trying to figure that out by doing coring, and that's not that easy because erosion has really obscured where it came, where it was coming in, where you find that estuary. And then the dunes that have formed during the Holocene cover up that drainage.
Yeah.
So it's lost. Was Lost River fresh? It's a good question.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the modern chemistry, it's the saltiest tributary in the whole basin.
Yeah, in the Rio Grande in general, right? Like, so even the Pecos, as it comes from New Mexico to Texas, spins off from those basin and range areas over there, and it's really high in alkalinity and salinity. So that was what's like immediately when I'm reading this, I was like, well, you know, how do we know? And I didn't know if there were mapped buried terrace deposits from the Lost River that, you know, maybe there's some mineralization that would support anything like that, but it was just as I'm reading this, going through and trying to brainstorm.
To me, it's an assumption, and it'll be one of those things that'll be hard to figure out. Personally, yeah. It's quite possible that even during the last ice age, Lost River, by the time it reached that area where the trackways were at, it was still a salty mess. The water wouldn't have been potable. If you did, you'd drink it, you'd probably get the runs. I mean, it just would have been salty. The lake does go, you know, at low stands, it kind of goes into a brine, and we know that it goes into a brine because we'll find foraminifera in those deposits that are from like the Gulf of Alaska. And it's like crazy salt concentrations for these critters to live. And then as it goes into a high stand, they die off, but they're still present. So it's still pretty saline when it's supposedly fresh.
So I was going to make a terrible joke. But I was going to say that would completely destroy the coprolite theory too. If they're out there drinking this water, you wouldn't have ball like hard poop. You'd have runny poop. And so it wouldn't be in this ball formation. Sorry. I have kids and we talk about poop all day. So yeah.
That's true. But the thing is when these things get pumped, they get thrown up there after the balls form and they get thrown up onto the shoreline and then they're exposed to surface processes. Wind and water erosion will move them around and it unravels the ball. And that's when it drops out the seeds and the stems into these discontinuous layers. But if they get wet, right, sometimes they don't move around, but if they get wet, we did these experiments where we would dip the balls. And if you dip the balls, I'm telling you, you dip those balls twice, they'll come unravel real quick. All right.
Don't they all? No, that's awesome. I think your model is really sound that, you know, it explains away the previous theory, which that in science, that's what we do. Someone makes an interpretation, then someone else either continues with that interpretation and provides evidence that supports it, or there's another interpretation that might be better. And people build off of that until we have a general consensus, right? Okay. I like the direction you're going with this. One thing, when I read through the paper at first, I was like, oh, okay, so his dates on the balls agree with the previous research, but there's another component. And Carly, you brought that to my attention earlier that actually like your age dates, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but you're saying that hard water effect is artificially making these too old and that further research needs to be done to determine how much that effect is. But the age dates of these balls should be younger, thus making the footprints in that basin, it should be older. I said younger, I think, thus making those footprints younger.
All right, so you have the hard water effect, which can make that plant date thousands of years older.
Yeah.
A paper just came out a couple of months ago, and this is a slick paper. They went to a museum collection and they found rupia that was collected by a botanist in 1947 in the basin. They radiocarbon dated that modern plant. Came back 7,400 years, right?
Yeah, because it's pulling from multiple reservoirs of carbon.
Right.
So, yeah.
The problem is that when you have these sesh events and it breaks apart the rupia, it's taking rupia from all over the basin, mixing it together in a match, and then it's rolling, bringing it over to the other side of the lake and rolling it into balls. So what it's doing is injecting these hard water affected seeds into younger strats. and it makes the strats seem older than what they are. The issue is that they claim that, you know, this site had all these unique conditions. It's a unicorn site, right? That you had fresh water coming in and the water was really shallow and it was well aerated, that you didn't have that effect, and that the plant was in a primary context. Lake balls show that they're coming from all over the basin and those seed layers are in a secondary context. If that's the case, the hard water effect's there. We just don't know how bad it is.
Right. I think I was reading that the hard water effect can affect up to 10,000 years, you know, and maybe people aren't expecting that to be the case here, but somewhere in between, you know, 1 and 10,000 years of an artificially old date.
Well, I guess, did you find that the older the balls were, like the droopier they were, the lower down they were?
No, sorry. This is how we act. We're just children. And it's awesome.
Well, they're like saggier. They're like they're further down, so they could. That was just a silly.
I actually have a legit question.
Oh yeah, please take over. You got to steer us back.
You know, hold
on before I field your question, Carly. I mean, the balls do change. Okay, the erosion moves them around, and as it moves around, the balls change. Sometimes they're like these nice round balls, but you know, if they get wet and they move around, they'll turn into pallet shaped balls.
And,
right?
they lose their seeds over time. Less seeds.
That's right. The what's real interesting about that is that these past researchers always saw these different shapes in the balls, and they said that they were from different animals. But in reality, they're just different lake balls in disintegration stages.
Right.
So, anyway.
All right, yes. Carly.
So I'm just wondering, why invest all this time and all this research into these balls when, you know, your dates get messed up? They don't seem like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a sure thing. Because in your paper, you mentioned that there were some dates that were rejected and some dates that were accepted. And then even in our discussion now, a lot of things are up in the air with these balls. So why use them? Why test them? Is there not something else nearby the footprints?
No. As of right now, it's what's available for dating. And sometimes what's available for dating is not the best thing to use.
Yeah.
Now, let's see where this goes, because a few other things we could talk about. Good question.
No, I do like that question, because so when we do a lot of age dating at work, I do throw out dates. Like I'll throw out a date, for instance, if I'm looking at a soil profile at a road cut, for instance, and it's particularly a dynamic environment. And even if I remove back to a fresh layer of soil, like we try to do that. If we can, we go on top of the terrace tread and we'll dig down a meter and we expose the fresh dirt, fresh soil horizons. But there's stuff like pedoturbation that can affect dates, and I'm talking about optically stimulated luminescence dating, radiocarbon as well. Like if you do a radiocarbon date and it comes back weird, it could be that this has just been recycled through time and then it gets dumped into this fluvial deposit. And the same kind of things I would think would apply here, that you have a recycled seed. And that's why I brought up, like, you have scour along the shorelines, you are removing old sediment that might house an older ball, and it pulls the older seed from the older ball and then it gets reworked into these other mats.
It was kind of like that shale deposit when we were out looking for fossils.
I wrote that down.
Ooh, so it kind of like scoured out.
The snails.
Yeah.
That there were the new ones and then the old ones.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dave, I don't know if you want to comment on that more. I do throw out dates, but they have to, you can't just throw out a date because you don't like it. And you know that. And everyone, I hope no one does that. But, you know, there's geological context that has to be taken into that decision. And then there's always the error in the lab, right? And that's in processing, and all the labs usually are really good and, you know, do their due diligence, but they'll flag stuff. You'll see in the report, they'll have like JFLAG things that stand out and that aren't within protocol. So,
and also what I appreciate about this research is that it wasn't just left at, oh, these are the coprolites, like, right? It's something you, like, again, like you've talked about it. It just didn't make sense to you looking at it, being in the context and not just, you know, reading about it in a paper, but you were there and you're like, huh, something is just gnawing at my brains. Yeah. And I think the improving of what's known is always, I think, the pureness and the beauty of science.
Yeah. And Dave, so maybe, because I like to know what other scientists think when they make those decisions, right? Like, hey, we will exclude these dates. We do present the data, because that's the no-no, right? Like, you don't present the data that you have. But what were your thoughts as you went through that decision to exclude those outlier dates? There was a really young one and a really old one, I believe.
Man, the reason why we excluded them, because the error was so high.
Okay.
I could have kept them. Sure. Why not? But I didn't feel like that was conservative. And man, if I had a 12,000 year old date from a lake ball with a couple hundred year air, man, that would have made my day a lot easier. That is great. Yeah. It would have been. I mean, you talk about shock value. That would have been amazing. But I just didn't feel good about it because the air was a couple of thousand years or whatever it was for that one. So I just didn't want to take a chance on that. I think that for that 12,000-year-old date, it was plus or minus 2,300. And then there was another one that was like 1,500. So conservatively, just get rid of it.
Yeah. You know,
I wanted the shock value, but I wasn't going to take that chance. Somebody would have said something about it. Yeah, right. It might be out there, and there might be something to that date. But what I was trying to do when we radiocarbon dated, I was trying to date the smallest seed aliquot possible to get a date. Now, the dates that are based on the seed layers of these trackway studies, they're using 60, 80, 100 seeds. That's a lot of material for radiocarbon dating. And what that does is it averages out that signal. Yeah. And I didn't want that.
No.
I wanted the most precise, well-defined material possible.
Yeah, and that's the thing is it's dependent on your age dating method, right? So in radiocarbon, what you're saying, like, that actually makes sense. If I was doing OSL dating, I would actually prefer to have 100 aliquots. And then I would, because then you get into the statistics and in those models, and it's like, well, you have a central age model, which is what you just basically described. It averages everything out. And then you have your weighted mean, which I actually find really helpful. But in this case, they don't report that way from the lab usually. Radiocarbon. So, you know, I get it. And you reported the ages anyway. So maybe someday someone, you or, you know, someone else will figure out, hey, that age data actually is good. Maybe it's not, you know, but that's the purpose, is present the data and come up with your interpretation. But Carly, I really like that question because it's like, things have to make sense. What's that decision-making process that we have to do as scientists?
Yeah. And then also, I know I briefly mentioned it, but is there a little feud going on in here amongst the geoarchaeologists? On this topic, you said it's a hot topic, and I see something in here. Like, we don't have to get into it.
There does seem like a feud because the word spurious was used to describe someone else's argument.
That's a good word. Can you define spurious?
Just feel like they came up with all this convenient stuff around, they told the story around their data, and that may or may not be true. I mean, that's where I was getting at. They dated a lot of seeds per layer, right? They did an uneven sampling design. And in my opinion, they did that to wash out the hard water effect. If you were to date individual seeds, it would probably be all wonked out and there'd be age reversals and so on and so forth. And I think they did that to smooth out the chronology.
Right.
It's really weird to go through and have, say, 6-7 seed layers ago. I'm going to do 40 here, 60 there, 100 there, 80 there. That's weird, just my opinion.
In this feud, we're team Dave, team Dr. Dave.
Well, thank you. I mean, who knows where this is going to go? You know, one thing about the lake balls, you have to think about it as this is an event in the rock record, right? A storm produces these balls. So one event that took hours mixed together seeds that span 1,500 years. Mm-hmm. That's pretty remarkable, right?
Right.
There was a rancher in 1917 that saw a storm blow in. It did the same thing I talked about. It ripped up the rupia, floated in mats, and it mixed balls within hours. And at the end of the day, he had three wagonfuls of buffalo balls. That's a lot of balls.
That's a lot of balls.
Right? I mean, wouldn't you agree?
No,
a lot of balls.
Balls. I mean, How do you recruit field workers? Like, hey, I really need you to come out in the field and carry a lot of balls. Like, that's all you got to do. Like, just stand there and carry the balls.
Get some balls.
Or were you doing this? Like, were you like solo out there, or did you have a team?
I had Matt Cuba is the guy I go out with a lot. He's a co-author. That guy has a lot of Aboriginal knowledge out there. He's a good friend and good colleague. And we spend a lot of time like, oh, let's go over here. This looks interesting. The geology's right. We go out and look for old archaeology. But he and I spent a lot of time looking at balls, collecting balls, talking about balls. And he's a force to be reckoned with. He's really done a lot of work with how the balls break down and all that. It's really good stuff that we're in the process of putting together for the publication.
So what you're saying is that you can entrust Matthew Cuba with your balls.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Nice. You can entrust him with balls.
Nice.
All right. So we would like to introduce the new
I Love Gourd,
Gourd mineral series. This season's they're going to be all gold minerals. So
all that is gold does not glitter. Not all that wonder or lost.
Wow.
Mineral minutes. Mineral.
I love minerals.
Mineral minutes.
Minerals.
Minerals.
All right. Well, this week's Mineral Minute is brought to you by the gold, lead, bismuth, tellurium, metal sulfide, buckhornite.
Buckhornite. Chemical formula is... Do I need to read that the right way?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gold, lead, 2, bismuth... Beryllium 2, sulfur 3.
This mineral is a black mineral that is opaque in nature and can be formed as euhedral or thin lathe-like crystals.
The minerals that are closely associated with buckhornite include tetradimite, melanite, pyrite, gold, calaverite, galena, altite, telrobismuthite. I don't want to see the next one. Magiite, hematite, sphalerite, chocolate, chalcocite, bornite, covellite, and aconite.
So the relative hardness of buckhornite is 2.5.
Orthorhombic point group. 2M2M2M.
Buckhornite is distributed in the following places.
Oh, hold on, my boys. Buckhorn, lead, silver mine, 1.6 km northwest of Jamestown, Boulder, Colorado, Boulder Co., Colorado, USA. Golden Sunlight Mine near Whitehall, Jefferson. Oh, county, right? What is Montana pepper?
Peepier.
And Bo Hillbilly, Boho Dildos. Mine. J-Lo's center gold deposit.
Say it again.
Hold on. I got a center gold deposit.
it's a sphincter.
Sphincter.
Dry love sphincter.
Sphincter.
Southeast of Prague, Czech Republic. Megrid Sore District, Armenia.
Occurrence of buckhornite and useful mineral association buckhornite. The curse in hydrothermal gold terillium bearing deposit.
Buckhornite is euhedral to subhedral bladed crystals flattened on the 100 plane and can grow up to 1.5 millimeters and occur as foil-like warped bowed or in helical spirals, commonly aggregated in clusters.
And like some of us, buckhornite has perfect cleavage on the 100 plane.
Buckhornite's tenacity is sectile and flexible.
Buckhornite has a splintant metallic luster.
Buckhornite streaks gray.
Buckhornite is a biaxial mineral with distinct purplish gray to pale blue pleochrism.
Stay tuned for next week's mineral. Hunch you night.
That was good. Mineral minutes. Mineral. Mineral. Mineral minutes. Minerals.
Minerals. So that was a little bit fun with the gold.
The gold.
The gold.
I want gold. Okay, I got it.
Well, I do have another, I guess, technical question, maybe. I don't know. So I was talking to you a little bit about this, I guess, late last night. What about dating the sediment? And so if they're all gypsum layers, I get it. Like that, we're not going to be able to use like some of the techniques available. But like if there's carbonate rinds on any of these, like you could do uranium thorium. But that's difficult because it's not a closed system. I totally get that. But what about like doing luminescence dating? If there's enough quartz and feldspar fraction in these silts and sands on the overbanks that the footprints are at, do you think that anyone's going there? Do I need to go there? I don't know. I just think of that as being a really good way to date, to get some kind of age constraint on the footprint.
So uranium series has been applied in combination with the seed layers, but the dates are wonky. They come back 40,000 and the seed layers are 20. They didn't really trust that.
Yeah.
OSL dating has been brought up. It's possible, but one of the concerns is that, remember, these are like lake varves. So if you ran a tube in there, you're not sampling one varve, you're sampling maybe five or six varves. Or so you get a date from that, it's going to be averaged out and it might not be representative.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I always wonder about that. Like if you have less than a centimeter thick of strata, like how, you know, luminescence dating can get really tricky. Because I've seen people that go in and they'll date events and everything. Sometimes the dates are wonky, like you just talked about. And sometimes you have progressively younger layers, especially in like dune sands. They do a lot of that. But I was just curious if you know, there's another clock that you could put to bolster some of this. And especially once you figure out the degree of the hard water effect.
So, I mean, the thing is, if you put one tube in, you're going to have three different geologic, maybe even four different geologic events from like wind, water, the lake in the tube, and you're going to have a probably poor resetting, and that's going to affect your results. So everybody's really staying clear of that, and that's probably right. But to me, though, if I had the funds, I would just see what happens, you know? you know, throw shit at the wall, see what sticks. I mean, that's sometimes good science, in my opinion. You don't know.
Yeah.
Where everybody is going, though, right now, is a lot of talk, is dating terrestrial pollen from the trackway sediments, particularly from the seed layers themselves. And that may or may not yield good results. The problem with that is the context is crap because of the balls. The balls indicate that, like, you just have a tremendous amount of mixing there.
Yeah.
It's not clean. And the problem is you don't know where the pollen's coming from. And I hate to say hard water affected for the pollen. That's not true because pollen theoretically should not be hard water affected. But a lot of there are studies out there that show that pollen can come back erroneously old when it's not supposed to. And if the pollen matched the rupia, I'd be kind of skeptical of that because rupia is notoriously unreliable. That's a scientific fact. In my opinion, a scientific fact.
Yo, yeah. That's really good. I mean, I feel like that was in my notes somewhere, the pollenological data.
I do like that, yeah. And then, so finally then, well, not finally, I don't want to close it off.
Yeah,
cosmogenic dating is pretty cool. Like you have like beryllium 7 and chlorine 36, what, aluminum 26. And so I know that some of those they only have like some of them are like older than like 50,000 years. You can't really date stuff before. But I think I thought beryllium 7, beryllium 10, that you can date things like 10,000 years and older. So I don't know if that's still being used right now. I know in paleoseismic stuff it is. In illite dating and that kind of thing. But have you ever heard anyone discuss this on this particular project?
I have not, but that doesn't mean that that's not in the works out there.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, but it might work. Everybody wants to stick with radiocarbon just because it's
known.
Tested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tried and true.
Less jazz in it, you know, but you got to have good context for it to work. And if you have poor context, it's just going to give you results that are not meaningful.
Well, I was going to say too, Brian, for us to get like wrapping our head around like the context of where, like, you know what I'm saying? Sitting here in Fort Worth, Texas, like not being out in the field and having a good grasp of what is going to be more acceptable versus not acceptable.
Yeah. I think it depends on like how long those are exposed and like when. And so that's a huge uncertainty in itself.
Sure.
But I think what you're doing is like you're talking about like the context has to make sense, and your paper is steering everybody in the right direction. If you know, in my opinion, that you know, you're eliminating some of the things that seemed like, you know, this may not be the the context of what these balls, like actually, you know, how they formed. And that will then allow for perhaps the true answer to come later. So I definitely appreciated the paper. I thought that it was one of my more fascinating reads lately. I've been dealing with too many terrace deposits, and I hope my coworkers are not listening in for me saying that because they know I love my fluvial geomorphology, but this was a nice break.
Well, you know, I think what's really unfortunate is that people knew about them, but no one really thought about sending them off and just getting a second opinion.
Yeah.
And that's a bummer. I mean, you always got to do due diligence, and it could be one of those, it could be that ball that follows you around. I mean, you know, because I mean, it is a worldwide phenomenon. It's rare in lakes, but it does happen. Like there's a lake in California, Little Borax Lake. This has only happened once in 100 years, but they do happen. They have all kinds of names, fuzzball, burr balls, buffalo balls, even. And this is crazy. After I wrote the paper and I'm sitting down and I'm working on another paper about this, I found out that Henry David Thoreau talks about balls, these balls in Walden, in his 1854 book, Walden. And that just blew my mind. He just sat out there. He wasn't at Walden Pond, but he was by Sandy Pond, which is nearby. And he just spent a summer just doing basic observational science. And he outlines pretty much what I talk about in my paper, how they form, how they break apart on shore, how they get the pot, how they get cast onto shore. It was amazing. And he just called them curious balls, which I thought was great because they are curious. They're pretty curious little interesting things. So
curious balls. Yeah. I like that.
We have a little surprise section of poems by James, but I had to look this up. So I'm on my computer and it was like,
do you want to read a poem?
It does one good to see their balls.
Hold on, Brian. You're jumping it.
Start here.
Well, this is talking about the harvest, right?
All right.
I don't know.
Ready?
Maybe this isn't the same thing, but I'm going to read it anyway.
Okay. Well, let's give it a proper introduction. Poems by Brian.
But now for your news. Tell us of the year. Have you fought the good fight? What is the state of your crops? Will your harvest answer well to the seed time? Are you cheered by the prospect of stretching cornfields? Is there any blight on your fields, any murrain in your herds? Have you tried the size and quality of your potatoes? It does one good to see the balls dangling in the lowlands. I'm sorry. This is actually not what you're talking about, but I had to. I mean, he must talk about balls a lot if he's talking about these the lake balls and the crop hanging, balls,
hanging balls.
Yeah, there we go.
Do your balls hang low? Do they?
Hey,
no, there's definitely a T-shirt in this, I think, and maybe a bumper sticker, aggregate a pair. I don't know. But well, I've spent a lot of time on these balls. I have. Really have. I've spent years studying these things.
Thorough examination.
Oh, that was good.
The thorough.
Dang.
Thorough.
Pun of the day.
Okay, so some quick things. What's your favorite mineral, Dave?
Oh, man.
Throwing it back to geology.
You know, gypsum. I really spend a lot of time out there looking at gypsum. I like gypsum. It's interesting. It's dynamic. I'd say that, sure.
Have you made any gypsum angels? Like, do you lay around in the gypsum and, like, a snowy?
No.
It would probably be very soft and cushiony.
So. But it would. Every time that I think about gypsum, so like we have this sandbox that you can do like the topography thing, but it has gypsum sand in it. And the one thing that is remarkable every time is how dry it makes your hands.
Because it just
takes all of the moisture out.
Yeah. Yep. Wait. Mine's zircon, just so everyone knows. It's fun.
Azurite.
Azurite is beautiful.
That's where it's at.
Carly?
Yeah, no, that's great. That's good too.
I haven't decided yet.
Oh, that's
she's fine. She's undecided.
It's private.
Oh, well, that's okay.
I don't want to talk about it.
Sorry for asking.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to give you one of these, Dave.
Yes.
And whenever you whenever your new research comes out, you'll have to come back on and talk about that.
Yeah, please.
We enjoy the in-depth ball analysis.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd love to come back. Right now, Rupia still grows in the basin. And so we have this beautiful modern analog to understand the dynamics and to be able to infer back on the past. and spent a lot of time wading around in these swamps with waders on collecting this plant and studying the soils and radiocarbon dating. And that's something that we're working on right now. And it's some pretty cool stuff.
How fun to be part of the process. Like that discussion, you know? Like that's what it's about.
Front row seats, man. I'm in the arena and I'm excited to be in the arena. Whether, you know, all I wanted to do when I put this together was to get people to think more critically about what's going on out there. Whether it stands the test of time or not, I don't know, but that was my objective and I did that. And it's really nice to be in the arena.
Yeah.
I'm proud of that. And, you know, it's healthy. This is what we're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
So hopefully I'll be out soon and maybe you can have me back.
No, yeah, we'd love that. Yeah. Dude, I enjoy that thoroughly.
Yes, thank you very much for coming on. It was
making
this
our
was a great
season.
Like opening to season 5 of this.
You know, this wasn't that bad. I didn't know what to expect, but you guys are doing a good job and thank you for having me and hopefully more in the future.
No, yeah absolutely.
You guys be safe.
All right, have a good one.
Thanks. How dumb was my Henry David Thoreau? It was not applicable
so
at all.
Off. You were so off.
Okay. I just typed in Henry David Thoreau balls.
I want to read this.
Okay. Story time by Carly.
And this would be like one of my sad videos that I've been making lately.
You mean to say you want to do...
Where did it go?
Excerpts by Carly. Carly's colluvials. Was it the don't trust men? No.
Yes, Irishman
erects his sty.
Yeah, I'll read that.
Yeah, the whole thing.
I'm going to read that whole thing.
Reiterations by Carly.
We must not be too easily distracted by the crying of children or of dynasties. The Irishman erects his sty and gets drunk and jabbers more and more under my eaves. And I am responsible for all that filth and folly. I find it, as ever, very unprofitable to have much to do with men. Letters to Harrison Blake by Henry David Thoreau. Concord, August 8th, 1854. Mr. Blake, methinks I have spent a rather unprofitable summer thus far. Hold on, I can do it. I have been too much with the world, as the poet might say. The completest performance of the highest duties it imposes would yield me but little satisfaction. Better the neglect of all such, because your life passed on a level where it was impossible to recognize them. Latterly, I have heard the very flies buzz too distinctly, and have accused myself because I did not still the superficial din. We must not be too easily distracted by the crying of children or of dynasties.
That was good.
That was good.
Thanks.
Hold on.
All right.
So I I made this video about my coworker Eileen, who left, went on holiday, and I was miserable without her. So I made this video, and then I thought it was so stupid and funny, I just sent it to my dad for fun. But this is how wonderful and kind my dad is. He was like, wow, this is so good. You did such a good job. And he said, you need to start writing again. And I was like,
Dad,
I love you so much.
I can't wait to sit next to that man.
Yeah.
He is so nice.
Is he going to be mad at us being your other dads?
He knows no context.
There's going to be two dudes sitting next to him.
I hope he's never... Does he listen?
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know what I would do if he said, can I listen?
People ask me at work and I'm like, maybe don't listen around your kids.
Yeah.
Well, he had a problem with it when I first started doing it. He was like, what are you doing hanging around two married men? And without even knowing anything that goes on the podcast. I don't know. He might look at James with the ponytail and the tattoos and be like, what the fuck is this?
But what about his tattoos?
I'm acceptable.
It's because he looks Persian.
Look Iranian.
Kind of. There is an Iranian, the chemistry and physics building. They have photos on the wall. And the main guy, the department of the science guy, is an Iranian man.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he looks like me.
No.
Well, that's cool.
I saw him. I always look at his picture when I go to get my water. And then one day I saw him coming down the stairs. And I was like,
everyone always said that they thought I would be like a Persian descent by looks. And then when I did my DNA test, it was like none.
No.
Very little.
Your honker isn't big enough.
I always thought I had a big nose. It all went to my balls.
Bars.
Okay, I had a funny story.
Carly, was that you?
No, but I love that you were like, it's probably just Carly buying stuff.
Someone bought a horny for hematite shirt.
So I have a funny story, kind of.
Me too.
So I had someone go out and take a photo of a deposit that someone, like, they had excavated in this, and I was like, hey, that's really good terrace. I really want a photo of that so I can see, like, evidence of fluvial deposit.
I see where this is going.
There was two. Did I show you this? The bones? Did I not send this to you guys?
No.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I got. They FaceTimed me and they're like, is this a bone? And I was like, it was a geologist and an engineer out there. I was like, yeah, it's a bone. What do you think that is? And they're like, no, it's not. And I was like, yeah, it is. I was like, lick it. And I was like, lick that and then lick the pebble next to it. And so the geologist was like, okay, and licked it. And they're like, oh yeah, that sticks to my tongue. It's a bone. Well, the engineer, like, it is impossible to get an engineer to lick anything.
That's disappointing.
I know, but that's true. So don't, like, marry an engineer, I guess.
Oh.
Dang.
Well,
dang.
Anyways.
Dang.
But
dang.
The engineer licked it.
Yeah?
He licked, like, I saw him on FaceTime, like.
Oh my God.
Like, licking things. And then he was like, he got to the bone and he licked the bone.
Yeah.
And he licked it good. Mm-hmm. And His tongue did not stick like as if it was frozen outside, but you could tell his his paws.
Wow. Can you describe that more?
I don't know. There's some suction action on the pores. You know, you got to pull on those pores.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was my funny story. What was yours?
Well...
Shrimpies?
Well, kind of on the same thing. So I did tell y'all about long.
Yep.
Yep.
And
how convenient for this this episode.
Yeah, I know. So my friend and
wait, where's longer than his?
What?
Did I not describe it for y'all?
Kinda. We were in the field, on a field.
Yeah. So okay. I'll incorporate the description into my story.
Okay.
I don't know if y'all have had professional photos taken before, but it's really awkward. So the photographer is like do funny stuff, like get warmed up into it. So my friend Catherine and I, you met Catherine. We were doing photos together, and so one of them was like me fixing Catherine's hood and all that. And I guess Catherine like looked too serious, so the photographer was like, Carly, tell Catherine a story. So I was like, hey, you remember? And she was like, yeah. And I said, well, he had really. And she was like, what do you mean? And so, like, I can show you all the photos. They turned out pretty good.
Of his.
That's what I went thinking of.
Yeah.
Just of me and
please
Catherine.
Show us the photos.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was like, well, how do you know that they were like, oh, I gave Catherine the mustache too, and she looks incredible in it. Look at that.
Oh my God.
I know.
That's one hell of a mustache.
Yeah. Is that the mustache? The same one?
Yeah, this is the good one.
This is at Trinity Park.
What's happening?
How do I get that back?
You went the wrong way.
There you go.
Look at that.
Is that the... Dude, I can't picture you telling her that.
Oh, yeah. So I'll tell you exactly what I'm telling Catherine. She was like, how do you know that they were so... And I said... are your kids asleep? Should I whisper?
Dude, we've been yelling...
Yeah, but this is like...
No, they have one more week left. It's okay.
Okay, so...
They talk about all the time.
Well, they don't know about...
That's an assumption.
That's an assumption.
The details, I would say. Anyway.
They hear in their...
Okay.
Was it slapping?
No. Good for I'm a... He's a... So things are hanging, right? And you know, sometimes you gotta in.
Pidge.
You gotta... Pidge.
You have to...
Well, sometimes yeah, the girl okay. helps.
That's fine.
That's kind of... No? I like that. That's...
It is.
Yeah. So I went to... That and I'm not
oh
really...
no, you milked him.
No, you
like
got his in.
No,
oh,
no. It was like fling around down there, and I'm like, okay, I'm for thing like long, you know. And anyway, it was like they were so fucking
like an old doorbell.
I mean, just insane. And like, of course, I'm not gonna say anything to. you know, didn't say anything.
What about what he's done? Did you get a look at those?
No, but wait. So like afterwards, I was like, hey, do you mind if I Perry? And he was like, which ones do you want? And then started telling me about special on because that's how is.
No.
Yes.
No.
No.
Yes. So I didn't have to anything at all. And I wasn't like, oh, I was just like, I'll take these black.
So what was his of his own? But I still,
dude, that's like a, I don't know when it happens. Like, I know it's happens they like were, gradually.
No, let me tell you, my life.
It happens very gradually.
Never in my life, by effort.
They were like you're the Downton Abbey, like fucking butler.
I'm telling you, you know, like on the, sometimes you see him on the back of like people.
That's the cow.
Yeah. Anyway.
And just.
Yeah, but not normal. Not a normal. Anyway, that's that right there.
Is what you're saying. Look at your face when you.
That's
say
like
that.
The moment that you. You're like, what? Yeah, the I fuck think is so. This?
Yeah.
This is what they're all like.
No, and then she then so then we had to do role reversals. So then she was like,
I'm gonna tell you a funny story.
Sure.
No, what was her funny story?
She was just telling me about how is unsized and she has like given a blow. To an unsized penis, and so she's like, I'm really like, even now I still don't really know how to do it. And so I was like, oh my god, that's kind of like, it's kind of a scary thing.
What?
I've only seen them in, never in real life, and I'm like, oh my god, what would I do if I ever saw one in real life?
I've seen one in real life because at the fucking Y in downtown. This is another funny story. So I joined the Y because it's like right.
If you can tell a story, tell it into the microphone.
I was telling
mine
into the microphone.
All right, so I joined the Y because.
Wait. All right, so you joined to the Y.
I joined the Y because it's right down the street from work, and they have a sauna.
Why?
What?
The Y.
Why?
Why?
Yeah, that one.
But why?
So why? Okay, they have a sauna.
They have a sauna, and. You know,
seems
like
a good place to get a staph infection.
Right? Like, especially after what I tell you.
Uh-oh.
So you go in there and like guys my age, you know, and like maybe a little bit older and younger. Everyone's at least wearing like underwear or a swimsuit or something. No, there's always like three old guys, different ones every time, that are full blown naked, like doing this. And like this one guy has this elephant trunk hanging down that is uncircumcised. And I'm like, I just like, just
a gape.
Yeah, I couldn't even like I was like, no, I don't, like that is like abnormally, like that's like elephantitis of the dick. But it doesn't have a head, it's a trunk. And I was like, holy shit. But he just sits there and he's just reading the paper like this in the sauna.
Man,
but
I cannot wait to be that old and just
but
not
that's the
give
thing is,
a
it's
fuck.
All the old guys. And then there's another one that sits there with his legs crossed, but his dick is just like. Out here.
He's got a hook in it.
Yeah. And he's just sitting there like, and then another guy is sitting there naked and he's just like, I'm like, okay, there's another naked old guy in here or whatever. He just got here. He just goes, ugh. And he lifts his leg and puts it over the back of his head and his asshole.
Shut the fuck up,
bro. Are just like there. And then he switches legs. Yes. Somehow, like,
oh, you're serious?
Why is he doing this in the sauna?
Oh, no. I wanted to cry. And so that's like, it's every day that there's something I see in the sauna. Wow. And it's not like it would be better if it was like a co-ed sauna because then it's like they wouldn't do that in there.
They so would.
Oh, it'd probably be like Jesus. Doing more stuff.
Even worse.
It's the worst. So that's my why story of the day.
Oh, why?
Why? Exactly.
Why by Brian?
Please, you are that's allowed his, to post that
that's
one.
That's his new cologne. Why by Brian?
Free staph infections.
A picture of a butthole of a dude.
Dude, it was so bad. Like, I couldn't help but look, but it's like the hair was just like.
Oh my god!
Well, at least you're honest about like everyone fucking looks.
Man.
Okay. So should we do...
Yeah, we gotta finish this.
Yeah, do a little... Because we haven't done one of these in a while. Let's do a little bit... one of these.
I'm so scared.
Right. That's
all right.
I haven't done one of these in a hot minute, Bri.
Yeah.
So
this is
rocks.
That freaking rocks. And this episode freaking rocks.
Yeah.
Y'all rock.
Y'all rock. I've missed y'all.
Y'all are my rocks.
Mm-hmm. What kind of rock am I, Carly? I'm fine with bastinite. I'll also take metaglomer crist amphibolite, something like that.
All right. So we don't have to listen to the whole thing, but. I guess we're going to just do a little bit of...
So you have some bands goings, maybe. Maybe you're doing new stuff. But I thought it'd be good to also, in addition to that, like talking about what this next year is going to look like for you. But top albums of 2022, right? You know, that's a big deal that you see everyone post their... Whether you want to see it or not, people post what they've been listening to all year. And maybe people care what we listen to and our favorite. So
I think that's... That sounds like minimal. Yeah, so we're about to...
I thought I had a booger.
A boogies? A boogies?
Like,
all right.
I have to snap my thing sometimes.
Oh, I thought you were like, hey.
Okay. Well, since we haven't done an episode, tell us about your trip to...
Oh, shit. It's been that long.
Indiana.
Yeah,
You played Post Festival.
We did, and it was like... That was the best venue I ever played. It was the Vogue in Indianapolis. Definitely a bigger venue, like the biggest venue I played. But it was nice. Like it was like balcony seating all around.
Yeah, I saw the pictures.
That's got to like have our own like projection. And it was like, I really like Post Festival because it's, you know, like you get to be introduced to new bands every year, but you get to see old friends that you've been in the scene with for years. And we were really like well received, sold a lot of merch, got to hang out with cool bands. Special shout out to Frail Coastlands.
Hey, Geology on the Rock's own Coastlands.
Shipwreck Carpathos. I want you to guys, you look them up. And then Black Flack and the Nightmare
Fighters.
You want
me to do what?
Yeah.
How about a please and thank you?
Yeah, Brian.
You should do this. Now, but yeah, no, all those bands were awesome and many more. And it just like was kind of a highlight of the year for me. Everyone played well. It feels really good to play on a really loud stage.
Yeah.
I don't know what that feeling is, but you feel it in your innards,
in your
balls. We were talking about like, man,
would you feel it in or shirt balls?
Both.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, so that was good. And then after that, we played with one of my favorite bands, Glassing. They also played Postfest, but we played with them in Denton. It was really odd that like kids still come out and like we're all in like our late 30s and some of the Glassing guys might be older. I don't know. But it's like kids showed up and they was packed at Andy's in Denton. You were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great because I had my huge friend with me. And so I was like, get us to the front, man. And so I just grabbed like the back of his belt and he just like, that's how big he is.
I just remembered something else from that night.
Oh yeah. You're playing the guitars?
No. The wall.
The wall. The hole in the wall.
Oh my God.
Where the men can see it all.
That didn't get posted anywhere, did it?
It sure did. No. Great. Maybe just in our text.
Okay. Well, there's that. Okay.
Well, and then the last show I saw you, like, Carly was afraid to come up there. I was like standing up close. And
dude, that like, so the last show you all went to was our last show. And that was the worst show we've ever played. And so like, I feel
it didn't okay. sound bad.
I feel okay saying that because I have a recording of it and it was terrible. Like we were not tight. There were
it's like your butthole.
You know, 20 plus missed notes per song. Like there, that was a weird thing, you know, and it was very unlike us.
Well, do you think it was a lot to do with like maybe the monitoring? Well, y'all do in-ears.
We didn't do in-ears that night. Like we did click in-ears, but nothing else. Like we couldn't hear, but it just was a lot of stress. And so we'll probably take a break for a while and just, I don't know, recollect. Oh, yeah. Carly, I see a sticker on your laptop that is my band sticker. Thank you.
Driving Slow Motion. Well, yeah. I'll do this because the audio is not, well, there is lyrics to it, but I'm not ready.
Is this the new?
Not the one that I played last night, but I'll just do a little. I don't know how loud it's going to be. Comes the chorus. But then, hold on, I'm just going to get to the... Oh, maybe it's here. But the bass during the last chorus, listen to it.
Like Artist in the Ambulance Thrice style, real good.
Well, I mean, like, so that's not mixed, but yeah, whenever but it does sound more squashed whenever it's not in this thing,
right?
Like I that wham, wham, wham.
I love that.
Sounds so good.
It sounds way better.
I feel like that shows a lot of growth and development
that does.
In the band. Like yeah. That is
stepping out, you know.
It gives me a little bit like Black Parade era vibes, and I'm like, oh yeah,
oh yeah,
oh yeah.
So I mean, I feel like it does like the so our other guitarist like super like big into pop punk, so yeah. I had to shout out. I mean, like when I was writing it, I was like, well, and then it's fun to play too.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound like it's like pop punk.
The chorus, yeah. But then I get to
but
do
that
the
part,
little,
like, yeah, I like that. But that part, especially like. The pop punk you normally hear, like you'll have a little bit of bass like that going on, but that was very much like early post hardcore.
Yeah, it was. It's all over.
I really like that. Very good.
Fun fact about me: I can't hear like individual instruments.
There's like many people like that.
So like that's why I like live shows because I'm able to like look and I'm like okay that. Like I match the like fingers with the sound and I'm like, okay, that's the bass. Like,
oh, okay. I get what you're
saying.
Yeah.
Like I can't
differentiate between like the bass,
so like just
rhythm,
then, like
lead.
You could hear like a raster. Like it's all just one thing.
It is all one thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh. That's kind of cool though. I wish I could do that sometimes.
Me too.
Yeah. No, but like y'all are like, listen for the bass. And I'm like,
why'd you ask me? Okay. Yeah. So wrapping it up. Top albums.
So my favorite album, I didn't actually listen to a lot of music this year. I don't know what it was. I either listened to Silence or podcasts, but I did listen to a few records, but my favorite one that like, I actually came back to quite a bit. That was Dimensional Bleed by Holy Fawn. it was a great follow-up to their last record, Death Spells, and it's like really ethereal, kind of surreal sounding, heavy, like very massive, but very beautiful record. Like the mastering of stops and then introducing new instruments or reintroducing them, reintroducing melodies is a big theme in that. And I really appreciated what Ryan and crew did. So
how about you, Mrs. Colluvial Carly?
I really liked the Harry Styles album.
Okay.
I heard that was very good, but I haven't listened to it yet.
It is. I will say it was like one of the, so I'm not much of an album gal. My dream thing to do, and I'm sure you can do this, is to take like individual songs, send them to some kind of record maker and get all your favorite individual songs like on a record, on an album. And then
like a mixtape. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. But like, you know,
of a vinyl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can do that.
But that album was like one of the albums that I went out and bought. And I was like, I could sit here and listen through the whole thing.
I'm curious about that. So like, that's weird. There's not really that much of an age gap, but that's a real deal in music. Like we listen to albums, like most of my crew, we don't listen to a song and then like switch. Like it is start and then stop.
It's not like that for me. It's more of like, maybe there are one or two songs that I really like and other ones. I'm like, God, I just want to skip through this. And you can't do that on a vinyl because you don't want to scratch it. You know,
you just move the needle.
I don't, that scares me. So.
Yeah, no, but I get that. I've heard that like more and more people are tuning in less to like a sit down session for the full 40 minutes or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why you see a lot of bands too, moving towards like, they'll for like ever, they'll just like release a song. And
yeah.
It's like, singles. I don't want to hear an album, but Pierce the Veil in 2023, they are dropping a new album that I am super jazzed about.
There you go. So we already know it is 2023 record of the year.
Yeah. So my most listened to, when you first posed this idea to us, Brian, you're just like, what was your top album this year? And, like I said, if it's not like anywhere between 2012, 13, 14, 15, like post hardcore scene, probably not listening to it. Cause the album I've been listening a lot to is the, why did I just blank on their name?
I don't know.
Issues. Let me see.
Korn Issues.
No, God dang it.
I like Korn. Is that weird?
Yes.
No,
dude. I think they're like, no one sounds like that. They're like the one band that sounds like that.
They're very butt rock. Pet peeve with like people picking on other people's band. Music taste.
The band is called Secrets.
Wait, that's Disturbed. Wait, what?
The band is Secrets. The album was Fragile Figures. Secrets.
So wait, hold
but
on.
But then also like I See Stars, like New Demons, 2013.
Okay.
James, Fragile Figures, like 2013.
Sorry. Like album of the year. Not like what you listen. I mean like who this year?
Yeah, Secrets from 2013.
Okay, did you not listen to any new music this year?
No.
All right. We are both going to listen to Harry Styles' record.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's about to be 2013.
Like that kind of music, everyone's hitting on the same. That's why it's so tight. Mm. And so you hear the guitar going. Yeah. And then the bass is also going. And the bass drum is going. So that's why it's hard to tell.
But anyways, yeah. Well, so
James. I'm blown away that you didn't listen to it like someone created this year or at least put out this year. You don't have a favorite record. It doesn't have to be your favorite record, like, or most listened to. But
maybe A Day to Remember came out with a new song.
Okay.
Miracle.
There we go. All right.
As a PS, I think Orville Peck came out with an album this year too.
Orville Peck. Is that the cowboy guy that's a cowboy?
You know, I said this to my friends and maybe it doesn't make sense, but it makes perfectly sense to me. I wish that I was a gay man so that he could f*** me. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But
I guess.
He has like this really nice lyric and it's like something about, it's not about the letting go. It's more about the things that you take with.
That's real good.
Oh.
So his songs are serious?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was all a joke.
No.
Because I just, and that's me being ignorant, right?
But no,
I really
good.
Didn't know they were serious songs. Mm-hmm. Huh. Okay.
Well, all right. Well, then let's see here. Let me get
wait,
this
you guys don't want to keep talking?
This is season 5, so hopefully we can keep it going.
I'm down.
Okay. You want to do another episode next
week,
Brian?
I'll be way more free this year, so.
But until then, let us remind you to be cool.
Stay tuned.
And keep it.
And keep it on the rocks.
Yay, we did it.
Oh.
He just smacked himself in the face.
Missed it.
That's good.
Dude.
Well, hey, that was a great one.
I agree.
I got a center gold deposit.
Gold. I poop all day.
Did you just add that in there?
Yeah. That was it, right? No, it was by the Irish guy, Dingling.
Pee on me.
I need a bathroom break.
Oh. What are you doing, Brian? I'm making it go clicky clicks.
I know. The balls.
Megreds.
I'm telling you, you dip those balls twice, they'll come unravel real quick. All right.
I added that.
That's yeah, great. I see that. I get that.
And the boho dildo.
Don't they all? This is the
where you dip the balls.
it